Lucky today.
Welcome to America Tonight. As you all know by now, each and every show we go inside the Beltway with the true insiders from Talk Radio News. Always a pleasure to have Ellen Ratner on the show to lead us off. Ellen, on this show, when we bring up the super committee, a lot of the callers say, what's it about? Isn't it just going to automatically fall to that trigger? So there's some confusion on dates and all of that. Is it after Thanksgiving or by the end of the year that if nothing happens?
They have to. It goes in two stages. They have to unveil the plan by the 23rd of November or maybe after Thanksgiving. I don't remember. It's within the Thanksgiving week. And then they have to have a vote on it by December 23rd.
All right, December 23rd, then that is D-Day, so to speak, for whether or not that trigger happens or something else is accepted and then the cuts are made that way. And there's worry, obviously, the Pentagon is talking about. Leon Panetta is talking about concerns about trying to parcel things out with the Pentagon, right? So do you hear a lot of conversation about defense?
Well, there was a defense issue today going on about how much money they're going to save, where it's going to be placed. I mean, he's promised that we're not reducing what we're doing in the Pacific. However, the commandant of the Marines was saying, well, maybe there may be a base that they don't deal with. I'm sort of following the argument and can't quite figure it out.
There you go, just like the rest of us. Let's talk a little bit about the Republicans. You know, the big news was Herm Cain still gets this big bounce. New York Times did a big thing on it the other day, where he is in a lot of these polls. What's going on with Mitt Romney? He was in town for a big deal, right, trying to get some endorsements?
Well, he's definitely trying to get endorsements if he possibly can. And he is doing whatever he can. I mean, he met with the American Trucking Association. Those are not, by the way, the guys that wind up listening to you as they're traveling about the United States at night. Those are the guys that own the trucking company.
Right, exactly. Which, by the way, some of them actually get in their trucks. Like, we've got a guy, Jane Kentucky, who does that. But for the most part, you're right. They're not the guys that are in there that own it. It's the other guys that are doing that. What about Rick Perry? What's going on with Rick Perry and his faux pas?
Rick Perry is saying that he never said that Obama was not born in the United States. He was just joking. I mean, does he really expect people to believe it? I guess he does.
Yeah.
If you say it enough, they'll believe it enough, right?
There you go. That's it. If you say it enough, or at least you'll believe it, that's the whole thing. He'll believe it if he keeps saying it enough, no doubt about it. How about I read something about Senator Feingold sending stuff out to recall the governor, Scott Walker, of Wisconsin. What's happening with this push here?
Well, I think what's really happening is that he sees himself as sort of a kingmaker, Russ Feingold, and so he is doing whatever he can to make sure that he is there. And one of the things he figures he's got nothing to lose. They're raising money. Why not try and do a recall?
Yeah. We'll keep our eye on that because we talked to a lot of people up in Wisconsin. The student loans, this issue has been big for the president. That was a conversation that came up the last couple of days because he announced his tuition plan. You remember that? Back in Denver, actually. And now Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, is saying it's not the best way. Is that right, to slow down tuition growth?
Basically what he's saying, yes, it's not the best way. And honestly, it's not something that the president's plan addresses, that somehow education costs are high because of health care costs. I failed to see the logic, but hey, okay. Education costs are high because of the way and the requirements that are made of educational institutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Be tough right now, though, I have to say. Be tough to be in there and not have a scholarship, not have a lot of funds behind you. You'd be digging for everything you get, don't you think?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, as always, thanks so much. All right, one of the things I asked Ellen is some Republican talk. She mentioned the gaffe by Rick Perry. I asked her about it. I say it's a gaffe because now he's flip-flopping on what he said before, and it's the whole birther issue, which now is buried, pardon the pun, but it's gone, it's done, everybody's, I think, has moved on from that because there's so many other fish to fry if you wanted to go after the man who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's what the Republicans want to do because they want to be president, right? And now we're swinging into the caucuses and the primaries. So the Texas governor says his fall in the polls is because he chose to debate his Republican rivals too much because it tears down the front runners. This is all it does. You know, already Perry, for example, has been in 5 debates. And he said that the debates are set up for nothing but a teardown. That's what happens. It's not about laying out the other things. Now, the national polls show that Perry led the Republican field with 31.8% support on September 12th, 5 days after his first debate earlier in the week. We were talking with the Baz about this, and that was a 12 percentage point lead on Mitt Romney. Now he's at 11.6%. That's 13 behind Romney and Herman Cain. Wonder how many other debates he's going to show up for. I bet he bails on some of those debates because, you know, there's 10 debates that are scheduled, 10 other debates. And it really has been a whirlwind of conversation across the country, all the different stops that so far the Republicans have made. And there have been a couple where they've opted out, like John Huntsman, who's very low polling-wise, the former governor of Utah. He bailed on Nevada. Nevada, a key swing state. It's going to be a swing state with all that high unemployment. He bailed on that state on that last debate there. But he's been around for the rest of them. I bet you that probably because of the knocks that he's taken, I'm going to say after 10 years of being the governor of Texas, he's going to try to ride on that credibility. Maybe do one or two more, maybe, but he's not going to do, for the most part, he's not going to show up to the rest of them, I bet you, after he made that comment about what happens when you show up and then you get pressed on certain things. And the problem is he was flip-flopping too much. I mean, listen, it's like this audience. This is a smart audience. You know when you see the flip-flopping because you're trying to please too many people. And I think sometimes when you go from running a state and then you jump into the fray when it comes to trying to grab the national spotlight, you see what it's like to really get grilled deep down over and over and over again, different ways to ask the same question. I think that's really where Perry tripped up. But he's hanging in. There's no whatsoever any talk in his camp of bailing out of this. So I think he's going to be there for the long haul until we get through a portion of the summer, maybe, and then we see how it all shakes out, let's say. Coming up on this show, I'm going to tell you how it's going to shake out. We're going to have an interesting conversation at the bottom of the hour with a man who is going to tell us why we should care about what's happening with the planet's population, because we're going to hit the 7 billion mark officially this Monday. Halloween! Halloween, it's no trick. We really are going to cross that 7 billion mark as far as people, as far as the population. 10:30 in the morning in the East, that's when it's being announced, right? How are they counting the heads on all that? Hang with us, odds and ends, around the bend. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here. Once again, for my friends at Midas Resources, these are hard times for investors. You don't know which way to go. Is the market going to recover? Is the Washington spending machine going to continue? And that means a lot of debt and maybe printing money to cover the debt. They call it monetizing the debt, but that's a fancy way of saying inflation. And a lot of people are worried about that. So you need the ultimate inflation hedge, and that's gold. Now, let me be clear about this. Commodities fluctuate in price. They can go up and down. Very volatile. There's no guarantee. But if you want the ultimate inflation hedge, you need to talk to my friends at Midas Resources. The number, 1-800-686-2237. If you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to have it in your possession, call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237. It's Midas Resources, 1-800-686-2237 for gold, and tell them Jason sent you.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract and have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. I was also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
As I was mentioning, that world population hitting 7 billion. You know, hey, you think about it. Do the resources stretch? And I'll tell you what, you know where the real battle is going to be? It's going to be over oil in Ecuador. Absolutely. And we address that with Dr. Brian Arbogast coming up in another 10, 15 minutes. Because he specializes in conservation of rare and endangered species. And did you know in Ecuador, I mean, that is the land of opportunity when it comes to coming up with new species. And I think they have a crazy, I forget what it is. I want to say it's a million different species of birds or some crazy number. But anyway, oil is a big deal there. And it's a big deal because in Ecuador, at the Amazon basin, there is so much of it. And if you dig that out, the rich areas that have all this, what they call biodiversity, it'll wreak havoc with that. But on the other hand, digging up oil like every other country, think of the money that would mean for a country like Ecuador. So we'll chat with him. He's in the wings right now. But before we get to that, I think that our live studio audience in Minneapolis at the Mothership, I think they're alive and kicking. And I said this was odds and ends. There is an end to report that I think is a very good thing because this is the chump of the week. The chief executive of mortgage finance giant, Freddie Mac, is going to step down. Yeah. And the guy's name is Charlie Halderman, and really, I know. I know. Let him eat cake. Isn't that what Marie Antoinette said? Let him eat cake. He had that attitude. Sorry, Charlie, or Ed, as his buddies call him at the club. But the Federal Housing Finance Agency, or as we know it, the FHFA, didn't really offer much of an explanation for why he was leaving, only to release this short and sweet statement saying that Haldeman has, it's not Halderman, not like the guy from Watergate. Haldeman has brought strong leadership to Freddie Mac, and that they were searching for a new CEO. Give me a break. Here's what happened. He took it over in 2009. He replaced the other chump who really tanked it back in September of 2008 when Fannie and Freddie were seized by the government at the height of the banks too big to fail financial crisis. And now you got a couple other board members are stepping down. And why? Because, ready to get your blood boiling, since 2008, Fannie and Freddie have cost us $141 billion. Not million, $1 billion, because we've had to pour money into them to try to stabilize the housing market. It's the same thing all over again. So, the FHFA filed a bunch of lawsuits last month, I want to say, against 17 different financial houses, or as we know them, Bank of America, which I affectionately call Bank of Mexico. I'll tell you that story sometime on the air in the near future. Goldman Sachs and a few others, because they were trying to recover billions of dollars from losses from risky mortgage investments by Fannie and Freddie. Yeah. There's a movie out, and it's called Margin Call. It's exactly about this. Very cleverly done. If you want to be entertained and yet depressed at the same time, go and see that. So for odds and ends, good riddance, because what's happened there? Nothing. That's the answer. Did he slide in and inherit some problems? Yes, but he knew what they were, and he was part of the whole deal anyway. He didn't do anything to flip that the right way. And I'm sorry, when you decide you want to be in charge and you jump up, raise your hand and say you want it because you're getting the big fat paycheck, then it's squarely on your shoulders. The buck stops with you. There are no excuses. I mean, there are no excuses in this. Absolutely not. Here's another odd and end for you. We always kind of breathe a sigh of relief. At least I do, because I think a family that live in hurricane territory. And the latest one is this Rena. Have you heard about Rena? I love how they name these hurricanes, too, by the way. They send out the list of all the names before the season begins. Well, here's some good news. Because you may have friends that have gone to Mexico. You may have gone to Mexico yourself. You may live listening to me, because there are some people who are, on the outskirts of Mexico. And Rena was looking pretty nasty, but now it's been reduced to a Cat 1. That's good news. So think about it. The tourist beaches, the Yucatan Peninsula, all that kind of stuff, where they were worried, Cancun, etc. You know, it's now been downgraded. So that's a good thing. Versus hitting landfall at 125 miles an hour. So it's not even going to make the U.S. That's not going to happen. Instead, it'll just poof, disappear, or as they call in the hurricane predicting business, drying out. Poor old Rena. She dried out over Cuba. Ooh, the jokes that are sitting right there. So the weather is certainly favoring the people who were scared to death that it was going to smash into them. And, of course, what does that mean? Where terrorism can be shaky, you know, they don't want to see those hurricanes. Probably still going to drop some rain, maybe 8 to 16 inches or so. You know, we're talking about people going to Cozumel and whatnot. But other than that, they do not have to worry about the serious
serious damage that could have been had in that one if it had gotten up, you know, if it had stayed, you know, 2 or 3 or 4. And, of course, 4 or 5 we know is disastrous, as we've seen in the U.S. when a hurricane picks up steam, even if it's downgraded a little bit to a tropical storm, usually where it hits, they're going to feel, I mean, they're going to feel the brunt of it on the shoreline area. So there's some good news. That's a good ending, I would say. Absolutely. Here's another one for you. And it seems like we have a lot of endings in this one. This could be a fair or foul kind of tug of war that probably here on America Tonight, a lot of you would either defend or argue about. It depends on how you feel, number one, about drug testing and how you feel about welfare and combining the two. A federal judge decided to bar the welfare drug testing law in the Sunshine State. He's blocked it. It's pretty controversial because what the law was requiring is that all welfare applicants, if you wanted to be one, you know, you needed the money, whatever, and you applied, you had to be drug tested. So now the law intervenes again, and it goes in the opposite direction. This kicked in July 1st, but a single father and the ACLU contended in a lawsuit that the new law is unconstitutional and violates the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable search and seizure. So, under the law, the Florida Department of Children and Family Services was requiring, in that short amount of time, drug tests for adults that were applying to get assistance. Anyone. Doesn't matter who they were, you know, what they looked like when they came in, whatever. It's not about that. Every single person was screened. And why do you think they were screened? They were screened because Florida Governor Rick Scott said it proves that you've got to have personal accountability. It provides that. And that it's unfair for Florida taxpayers to have to subsidize drug addiction because they were taking the money, not using them for kids, not doing any of that, not buying food, no, but shooting it up their arm a lot. The statistics were there. Florida's not the only state to try to pass that or pass it as they did and then have it go back to court. Michigan did the same thing, and that also was found to be unconstitutional by the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals back in 2003, and that was for the Fourth Amendment violation again. I don't know. What do you think? Fair or foul? We're going to talk about that again. We'll bring that back up. Stay with us.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alli-C. Why Alli-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alli-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alli-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alli-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alli-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alli-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alli-C. For more information and to order Alli-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alli-C today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
What happened, man? You used to be energetic, happy, and wow, did the ladies love you. Now, you fall asleep on the couch, irritable, and out of shape. Don't be that guy. Call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male, a natural supplement shown to raise testosterone by 50% and maintain healthy, normal levels. No injections, no appointments. With healthy testosterone levels, you can feel that energy again, that great outlook again, and yes, even a healthy sex drive. Right now, you can try Ageless Male risk-free. There's nothing to lose, guys. If you're a man who's noticed changes in your body, your mood, your sex life, call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male. Be the guy you used to be. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Don't wait another day. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Again, 1-888-246-0623.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America tonight. World population is going to hit, what, the 7 billion mark on Monday, this upcoming Monday. They say they even have an exact time for this, 10:30 in the morning Eastern time. So pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Brian Arbogast, who's the science advisor to ecology.com. They were lucky to snap this guy up. He has credentials that are a mile long, including he's an associate professor and assistant curator of mammals, Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington. Wilmington, oh, what a cool place to be. One of the most beautiful places, I think, in the United States. He's in our virtual green room right now, so we're going to usher him in. Dr. Arbogast, thanks so much for coming on America Tonight.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
You know, you think of the number, and I just said that, 7 billion people, 7 billion for the population. And the first thing, if I'm thinking about this out loud, and I know other people listening to the show are thinking the same thing, can the Earth really support, first of all, that many people? What happens if we run out of fresh water, farmland? Food would be pretty big on that list. And, of course, some people are saying oil, oil, oil. What happens there? And certainly what happens to the animal species. So, you know, that's a loaded question, loaded in the sense that, you know, there's so many different things we could talk about in that. But just if you're looking at the amount of people, what will it require us to do to keep moving along, surviving and thriving, in other words?
Well, that's a very good question, and 7 billion certainly is a scary number in a lot of ways. To give some context to the listeners, in 1800, there were only 1 billion people on the planet. So just a little over 200 years ago, we hit the 1 billion mark for the first time. We reached 2 billion in around 1930. So we moved 1 billion in 130 years. Since then, we hit 3 billion in around 1963, 4 billion in 74, 5 billion in 1987, 6 billion in 1999, and we're going to hit 7 billion probably on Monday. And so what you'll notice there is a was sort of an exponential increase. Most of human history, we've had below a billion, and certainly for most of that time, you know, in the few millions. And so we are reaching a point, really an unprecedented level of human population now that we've never seen. So how are we going to handle this? Well, 7 billion is not where it's likely to stop. We're probably headed toward 8 billion in about another 15 years, and the estimates, various projections say that we probably will hit somewhere between 8 and 10 or maybe even 11 billion by 2050. Now, those are models, and so some say it's going to be lower than that and some higher, but that's probably a decent ballpark guess. So it's not only a question of how are we going to deal with 7 billion, it's probably a question of how we're going to deal with 9 or 10 billion. And I would say that it's a really challenging situation. It's not hopeless, but it's challenging. Because what it's going to require is that we use more and more resources to try to keep up with population growth, to feed people and for energy and so on, as you mentioned. The food production takes land. Meat production takes land. If you're going to graze cattle, that takes a lot of land, right?
Sure.
And so, and in fact, that's actually much less efficient use of land than farming is. But if we're going to grow more food and if we're going to try to raise the nutrition level in other parts of the world, it's going to take more land. Where's that land going to come from? Well, it's going to come probably from lands that are now more of its wilderness or nature reserves and so on, areas that just haven't been utilized because they're out of the way. You can't just use any land to grow food. It's got to be decent land. It's also going to suck a lot of the water out of that. And we've already seen out west what trouble that can cause. So I think that humans probably, we're pretty savvy. We're pretty good at getting ourselves out of the mess at the last second. And I think there's a chance that we will be able to, through innovations, be able to deal with this. But the root question is, what kind of world are we going to live in, and what kind of world do we want to live in? And that's a different question altogether because, you know, 9 billion people cannot live on the planet the same way 3 billion can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned your credentials, and clearly you're a conservation biologist. You work with mammals, you know, animals. That's your passion, I can tell, in the conversation that we had off the air, too. You work around the globe. Ecuador is one of the places that you're back and forth in Ecuador. And you're trying to preserve species and the ecosystems that they, you know, inhabit. What's the biggest threat to that when it comes to human population growth that you were just talking about, how we want to live, et cetera, and how serious do you think they are?
Well, there's two major threats as I see it. There's human encroachment into areas that formerly were not very accessible and now have roads. That's always a problem. Once a road goes into a wilderness area, Soon, a lot of destruction tends to follow, illegal logging and so on, just by getting access. And you have a lot of subsistence farmers, and the main technique, at least where we work, is to cut down the primary forest. We work in mostly lower montane rainforest is what it's called, but it's basically rainforest. They will cut that forest down, and then they will grow a plant called naranjilla, which is kind of like a tomato that they make into juice. And the land will support that for, maybe 5, 7, 8 years. And at that point, they plant exotic grasses because they can no longer raise naranjillas efficiently, and they will graze cattle on them. So within about a decade, you go from this really amazing primary rainforest, which can have 1,000 species of trees in 1 acre, to, a cow pasture. On a small scale, that isn't a big deal. But the problem is that there are so many of these little small-scale things happening all over that it's sort of eating away at the edges and sometimes even further into these protected areas. And Ecuador is actually a really interesting case study because an area that's about the size of Montana. But it is the most biodiverse country for its size in the world. We talk about biological hotspots in conservation biology, and it's smoking hot. There are more species there than just about anywhere in the world. And so there are more, for example, there are more species of birds in Ecuador than in all of North America.
Mm.
And the issue there is then, how are we going to maintain these hyper-diverse areas, which really are the cradle of all the biodiversity on the planet? How are we going to protect those? At the same time, populations are growing there. The people need to subsist. They need to feed their families. They're doing the best that they can. How do we come up with some kind of a balance there? And I think that, the other major issue that has sort of come up a number of times in Ecuador is that there is a lot of oil in the Amazon basin.
Sure.
And that's really kind of scary because, again, that's pretty much where we work is on the east slope of the Andes, and it slopes right down into the Amazon. And that area is probably the most diverse area, certainly in the Americas. And, that oil is incredibly valuable. Oil is the biggest contributor to the economy of Ecuador. And, we're in a situation where we want that land protected. A lot of people do, but how we have to work it out some way to compensate Ecuador for not tearing up the land and using that and obtaining that oil. And it's hard, I think, because the United States and a lot of industrialized countries got to where they were because they used a lot of natural resources. And so it's a bit hypocritical to tell other countries how to use their resources. At the same time, if we don't, we're going to lose untold number of species.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, all good points. The biodiversity angle, huge, because it would be catastrophic, the loss of the biodiversity, as you mentioned, the species. Having spent some time in Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands and whatnot, I know exactly what you're talking about, particularly along that Amazon basin area. We only have a couple minutes left. We want to end on a kind of a positive note here. You're a conservationist guy, and I'm all about doing that, too, whatever we can do to chip in. And isn't that the good news for you in the role that you play? Because now there's lots of these conversations, that has to make you feel good. Don't you think that's the positive thing to take away, I guess, out of this?
I think so. I mean, the fact that countries like Ecuador are actually having a conversation rather than just saying, well, we're just going to, drill anyway, is I think, a step in the right direction. How that's going to turn out is anybody's guess, but at least it is a step in the right direction. And I think one of the things that I wanted to point out, too, is that we don't even have a clue how many species are on Earth. We have documented about 1 million species. Mm. That's plants, animals, insects, everything, right? And projections for how many there are out there are somewhere between, well, they vary a lot, but probably around 10 million. Some estimates up to 100 million.
Mm.
And so we're probably have discovered about 10% of what's out there. And that blows my mind, and that's the one thing that is really keeps me going, because there's so many things out there.
Interesting work that you do. Dr. Brian Arbogast, would you come on with us again in the future?
I would love to. Thank you very much for having me.
During the pre-winter sale at herbalhealer.com, stock up on powerful, natural flu fighters like olive leaf extract, elderberry power, and grapefruit seed liquid. Don't forget your vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, herbalhealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, on sale for only $9. And remember, herbalhealer.com offers eFoods Global products.
products. Delicious, premium, storable foods that contain no MSG, no trans fats, no GMO, and have a 25-year shelf life. Click the eFoods link on HerbalHealer.com and try eFoods storable meals for free. Bookmark HerbalHealer.com, then experience live chat, correspondence courses, and sign up for our free newsletter. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on and hit the pre-winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
I use WebEx anytime I need to meet with clients. With the new WebEx high-quality video, it's like meeting face-to-face.
Connect online and share what's on your computer screen with others. Anytime, anywhere. On their desktop, on their laptop, or mobile device. How do you use WebEx? Go to WebEx.com right now and try WebEx free. WebEx from Cisco. WEBEX.com.
Did you know nuclear radiation is still spewing out of the melted down reactors in Fukushima, Japan, and making its way across the entire U.S. continent, contaminating the air, water, and food? Dangerously high levels of radiation are a reality here. As a result, radiation poisoning is a distinct possibility for anyone living in the U.S. unless you do something to protect yourself. How? With liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Without a doubt, liquid zeolite is by far the best product to remove radiation from your body. It safely removes toxins and heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. Liquid zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite by calling 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
About business a lot here on America Tonight with so many of you who listen to the show all over the place, whether it's Connecticut or Illinois or Dallas, Texas, or in Florida somewhere, or in Lexington, Kentucky. So many of you own your own businesses, and a lot of you knew what that was going to take, that you were working someplace, you're doing okay, but you wanted to be an entrepreneur, and you wanted to do something different. You wanted to open a store up. You wanted to open up a restaurant. So what is it to take that leap to be part of either a franchise, to branch it out, to start small, to get bigger, that kind of thing? We're going to talk in this segment of It's Your Business with restaurateur Larry Klinghoffer. And he and a partner are opening up, you know, I love pizza, being from the East Coast. They're opening up Coal Vines is what it's called, in a really cool area not too far from where I live. And Coal Vines has taken off. It's one of those restaurants that does pizza right, trying to do, this is my opinion, trying to do the whole community thing, and I think it's working for them. Larry's in our virtual green room. I don't think he has any of his pizza with him, so we're going to usher him in. Larry, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And didn't you grow up in New York, too? Grew up in the East?
I sure did. I grew up in the Bronx, and my parents thought we needed some class, so we moved up to New Rochelle.
Oh, I have some jokes about New Rochelle. But you know, the pizza thing back east is really big. I mean, it's really big. The slice, the local feel. Growing up in New York and in New Jersey, that was a place where people went. You were loyal to whatever place it was. And to me, it feels like that's what you're trying to do with your restaurant. Is that true?
That's exactly what we're doing. You know, you hit it on the head. New Yorkers know two things. We know pizza and Chinese food. with coal mines, we got the pizza down. It really is. It's amazing. And, you know, coming from a New Yorker, that's a pretty strong statement. But it when I first tasted it, it blew me away because I haven't had anything like it since I left New York. So I miss that.
Yeah, I agree. You've been in the restaurant game for a while. How'd you get into being a restaurateur? So many people always tried to dissuade people from owning restaurants. So were you just pig-headed and you decided you were going to do it anyway? What made you jump into that kind of work?
Well, for me, it was sort of I backed into it. I was a real estate developer in the Kansas City area, and I had a shopping center we were trying to rent, and this concept came in to talk to me, and I thought, wow, what a cool concept. I'd never heard of it. And it was Hooters Restaurants.
Yeah, that was a cool concept. It really took off. It did. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, it was really intriguing. I went to one of their locations, and I watched it. I went every day for 2 weeks, and it was amazing. They were so busy. Everybody was having a great time. I got to know the owner of the restaurant, became friends, and 6 months later, I opened up my first one, believe it or not, in Omaha, Nebraska, in the Bible Belt. And for some unknown reason, it was a resounding success. Everybody loved it, although in the beginning, they didn't really understand what it was. And so that's how I got into it. One thing led to another, and I ended up with 16 of them and ended up selling the company in 2002. So I was really fortunate, got lucky on it.
So getting lucky, you saw what was happening when it came in, and as somebody who's opened up a franchise and then branched out and opened up more, what would you say to anyone hearing this that's thinking of doing the same thing that you did? What advice would you give them? What should they look for?
Well, the first thing I would tell you is before you get into anything, have an exit strategy. Know what you want to accomplish, and the best gauge for it, as it was for me, was to go in. I sat in a restaurant, like I said, every day for 2 weeks, and I watched what happened. I watched people's reaction to the food, to the ambiance, and I thought, you know, this is a great concept. You know, in the real estate business, you know, it's location, 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 and I thought if I could find a great location, and with that I mean sports, pretty girls, chicken wings, come on. I figured that was, as long as the ingredients are there and you have a feel for what you think might work, if the ingredients are there and you get a good location, go for it. Because it's a great business. You hear about a lot of failure, but there's also a lot of big successes in the restaurant business, and you tend not to hear about those so much.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot, because what's the common denominator? We like to eat, we like to socialize, and whether the economy's up or down, if the product's good and people want it, they'll go and they'll get it. Do you think that's right?
100%. And then, you know, in this economy, you know, I don't want to sound like an advertisement here, but, you know, with the Coal Mines restaurant we did, you know, not only was the food great ambiance, but the prices were really affordable. So when you can, in this economy, you know, people want to have that experience, but they don't want to have to pay for it. They just can't afford to go out and spend $80 or $100 on dinner. And, you know, Coal Mines, our average entree is $14 to $15, and it's every bit of four-star quality. So, you know, it's the concept. Whatever you're looking at, if it feels right and customer base is there, then you have a good formula for success.
And the restaurant that you're jumping into, Coal Mines, you're not just doing it in Plano, Texas. You're doing it all over Texas, right, in a couple other locations. Where else did you scout out and realize that they would work?
Well, 1 year and three locations later, we're still opening and looking for new locations. We've already opened at the Chefs of Legacy in Plano, Texas, right out of Dallas.
Right.
We opened downtown Austin in the new W Hotel there, and in Sugar Land, Texas, outside of Houston on the lake. So we have three great locations. And without going into too much detail, the founders of this concept were Joe Palladino and Phil Romano, and people that know Phil, he started Macaroni Grill and a bunch of other great concepts. But when we talked to him about it, we took Texas. My partner Jim Hammond and I took Texas. We signed a 10-store deal. And then we're going to partner up with them to hopefully roll it out across the country because it's such a great concept. And so we really believe in it.
All right, so keep that. You're listening in Connecticut. There's Macaroni Grills in that direction. You might see Colvine sometime soon. Larry Klinghoffer, thank you so much for coming on America Tonight. All right, continuing down that path of it's your business, I read an interesting thing the other day, and this study was done a couple of years ago. The rate of entrepreneurial activity, that means all of you out there who are starting businesses like we just talked about, is pretty consistent over the past decade. They say about 465,000 people are creating new businesses on average. And you know how many that is? Not yearly, a month. We're talking about a month. What a shift that certainly has been. And the makeup of the entrepreneur, the gender, the demographics, the geography. What's interesting, the entrepreneurial activity for men didn't change very much in the last 5 years, but it increased for women. And they also, in this study that I read, the Kaufman Index of Entrepreneurial Activity, I dug it up, the five states with the highest rates of entrepreneurial activity, what a word that is, right, were Montana, Mississippi, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Maine. The lowest rates of that, of people starting their own businesses, Michigan, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Illinois, and Delaware. I'm kind of surprised about South Carolina and kind of surprised about Delaware, frankly, because especially Delaware, I would think, I just recently was back there and it seemed like some of the areas where I was thriving. But, of course, that's not really an indication of how many people are starting businesses. And, you know, the rates of who's starting them and the 15 largest metro regions in the U.S., pretty high, like Miami was high, 50%, Atlanta almost 50%. The lowest activity, and this isn't a surprise, look what's happened. Michigan was one of the states I mentioned there, not a lot of businesses starting up. Detroit, low, 13%. Chicago, 18%. Interesting stuff, though. And this is the time to start a business for a lot of people to jump in and do it because, frankly, they, you know, the whole idea of relying on somebody else and thinking you're going to get the gold watch and the huge pension to be able to retire on the beach is just not there anymore. Lee Iacocca was the guy who said, people want economy and they will pay any price to get it.